been feeling like back to another episode of Evermove Review the Podcast.
the laughter that you hear. The voice that you're hearing is Mo, she, her pronouns, Afro Movie Reviewer, the Chocolate Chip Podcaster.
And I am Keek, they, them pronouns, Afro Movie Reviewer, the your favorite films podcaster. Welcome back. Welcome back.
This episode, like most episodes, is brought to you by a little bit of delirium and supported by the hydration that is in our cups. Amen.
Yes. Amen.
All right. So welcome back, y'all. This is season 7, episode 85.
Love it. Look.
Big dog. That feels real good.
It does. Oh.
Cheeks hurt from smiling.
So the episode is The Secret Life of Bees, the year is 2008.
Last time I won because I got you with my trickery.
Yes.
I'm gonna let you go ahead. I didn't want to be gay with you. Listen, Pride Month is over. Be straight.
Okay, anyway, because I'm straight, let's start with Mildred Loving dies May 1st. She is the last remaining plaintiff of the 1967 case Loving versus Virginia, where it was a banning of interracial relationships, and they said that it was a violation of the 14th Amendment. She culturally identifies as Native American, and I am so sorry, I'm going to butcher this, Rappahannock tribe, because of the one-drop rule, which they had codified into law in 1924, you were either white or colored, so they didn't recognize, like, Turtle Island indigeneity. So she was 11, he was 17 when they met, and they started dating when she was in high school. Her husband died in 1975 in a car accident that took her right eye. And after her husband died, except for, like, supporting the LGBT rights, she led a very quiet, private life. She believed her marriage and the court decisions was, quote, God's work. And she even had a quote that said, "We love each other and got married. We are not marrying the state. The law should allow a person to marry anyone he wants." Mm-hmm. They had two kids, and she died of pneumonia in Milford, Virginia.
Wow. She said, "I was born in Virginia. I was raised in Virginia, and I'm going to die in Virginia."
Look. Love it.
Wow. Okay. Miss Mildred Loving, not Miss Virginia. Just to clear that up for everybody who might have been confused.
She's the Loving out of Loving.
She's the Loving. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to do okay. I'm gonna start heavier. January 15th is the AKA sorority members 100th year anniversary in the year 2008, and they celebrate by donating $1 million in scholarship funds to Howard University in Washington, D.C. The reason this is heavy is because of timing.
You talking about that fraternity that banned trans people from joining, or you talking about Kamala? That
girl, yeah, Kamala. Kamala's an AKA.
There's so much going on with Divine Nine. It's like
so much happening right now. It's so much, and because I'm not in it, I'm not going to get into it. I'm just going to say that Kamala is of the AKA class from 1986. I'm not sure if she was like spring or winter, fall. I'm not sure. Didn't look into all of that, but she was a line of 38. The AKA classes at bigger schools, like the Divine Nine classes at bigger schools, are typically big, right? Mm-hmm. And that seems like 38 seems like a lot to me, but maybe it's not a lot to somebody else. I don't know. And to me, you know what I'm saying? And just for it to be your single class of line sisters, not like your, you know what I mean?
That's still a lot of people, like.
But that's squad the fuck up. Because the purpose to me of joining a fraternity, sorority, any type of organization when you are in a collegiate level is to be able to have networking once you're post that. Right?
Right.
And 38 people who feel like they know you well enough to back you up, 38 people that you could put on different resumes, different point of contacts, different references, all of that, that shit's beautiful. 38 line sisters who feel like Oh no, that's my dog. That's crazy.
I can vouch for you. That's nice.
I can really vouch for you. That's wild as shit. So the reason I bring that up is because we know Biden just dropped out from the re-election race. He has endorsed Kamala. Oh, they had what is it? What was the hashtag? Hold on, because I screenshotted it. They had a hashtag today that they, not today, but they were doing something over the last couple of days. It was hashtag win with black women. And they were able to pull like 80, like, I don't know, millions, millions, millions of dollars after this endorsement. And not just, oh, we are going to give to her, but donated to her already, right? My thing is that, number one, it's a something that goes on in this movie too. Black women trying to save the day, Kelsa Priest. But it's interesting how we could come together. It's interesting how we could come together and make that much money, because that is just black women and their buying power. That is what that showed me, and how we could absolutely change the world if we were unified. Because that one thing that unified all of them, baby. So that's my first fact, and that's it. Not too deep, not too much.
My second fact is very short. 2008 is the International Year of Languages. I'm like, fuck yeah, languages. And the year was for like linguistic diversity in regards to like cultural diversity, respect for all languages, and multilingualism. Like we're multilingual. You know what they call a person that only knows one language? An American.
Yeah.
I think I got that off of that Spanish court show. She was like, your name is not Moon. It's Luna. Going in. I love that so much.
Hilarious. Okay, then I'm going to go international. May 10th, 2008, the Philippine court acquits Imelda Marcos of a 17-year-old case of 32 counts of illegal transfers of wealth totaling an $863 million into Swiss bank accounts.
So, damn, girl.
That's so much money.
And over how long?
So it was, no. So this was 2008, but the Filipino courts acquitted her in 2008. This was from 17 years ago. I'm just gonna go through real quick. She was the first lady. Listen, she was the first lady for a while because her husband was president, and then the whole family got exiled to Hawaii in 72. Wait, hold on. They got exiled to Hawaii. Her husband died in exile in 89. Go ahead, come on back. In 1991, she immediately hopped into politics. When she got there, they just started throwing shit at her. So she had a 1988 racketeering case from Manhattan. She pled not guilty to saying, they said that she used $103 million in stolen government funds to be able to buy Manhattan real estate and art. Then she had a 1990 Swiss federal Supreme Court case that led to the 1998 reforms that made it more difficult for criminals and dictators to hide their money in Swiss banks. She had a 1995 human rights violations class lawsuit that was brought to her from Hawaii in the United States District Court that said that she owed $1.96 billion to 9,539 victims of human rights violations during the Marcos dictatorship. Now, her husband was the president, and then she came in and became president, and then after she was president, now her son president.
Oh, hell no. Get the whole family out.
So this is the thing. So it was big money and she got acquitted of it. And most of her acquittals came because they said that there was not enough technical evidence, or there was technical difficulties with the evidence.
She literally said
in a couple of the cases, she was like, I am an innocent bystander. My husband was doing that. I have no idea what you're talking about. I was just the first lady. I was just living the good life. So I did not do research into it, but what I do know is that her and her husband put the country under martial law in September of 1972. And we have often talked about how crazy that would be. So she was acquitted of it. That's a lot of money. And so many people are saying you took money. You probably took a little bit.
You took them. You and your family. Just prosecute them as a whole. What y'all ain't got no RICO?
What's the holdup? And then the fact that your son is the current president. Come on.
And then you blame it on your dead husband. Like, be for real.
He dead. He can't. I mean, you can't get him there. Blame him. I don't want to take the guilt. I don't want to be the only person that's guilty. No. That she said, I don't like that.
You gonna steal from governments? Nah. You gonna get your comeuppance though. You can't just be stealing from people.
You don't steal from people.
I'm done with you. I'm done with you.
You don't steal from people. All right, go ahead.
Okay, my last fact is November 19th, Claudia Castello of Spain becomes the first person to have a successful trachea transplant using a tissue engineered organ. So the trachea is the windpipe, right? 4 to 6 inches long, connects from your larynx to your lungs. Hers collapsed due to tuberculosis. Mm. So when I first read this, I was like, oh, this is so amazing. So like, hers collapsed due to tuberculosis, and they got this skeletal of the trachea, and they ended up taking some of her stem cells from her bone marrow, and they multiplied it and turned it into trachea cells, and they repeatedly like dipped her the donor skeleton into like her trachea cells until it was like completely her.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, you know, having to dip it, give it oxygen, dip it, give it oxygen. And I was like, wow, this is really good. Until I found out like the doctor that experimented on her fucked up like big time.
There's hella movies about him. There's hella movies about him.
Okay, because I was like, oh, this is so cool. No, he sent her sales to a veterinarian, like to do it. He got her consent informed consent fabricated because he showed her pictures of like pigs that he supposedly did things on, and like they're like, we don't know where these pigs came from. We don't even know if these are pigs that he actually, you know.
Who are these pigs?
I'll say, what the fuck? Oh my God, it's so much. They broke several laws, several regulations, no permits. It was wild.
And I'm wondering, is this the same doctor who went on to perform this practice on multiple other people with artificial ones?
And they died, yep.
Yeah, okay. Yep. There's at least two or three documentaries or like, or like, you know, fictional dramas.
Because that's why it was like the first successful. So I'm like, what the fuck happened to the rest of them? So.
Yeah. Wild times.
Mm.
Okay.
I just, just.
Yeah, punching them. all the hand emojis that people cannot see.
I look, because I'm not going to like incriminate myself on a podcast, but like.
Is the doctor still alive?
I didn't even see all of that because I was like, girl, she was struggling because apparently she didn't even have to have her lung removed at first. It's because he did a procedure before that and then it failed. And I said, oh my God, he literally fucked up your life, sis. Like, apparently he had to put in stents in before that and then like it failed and then her lung was like, she got an infection and tuberculosis. And then he was like, well, you can either do this or this. You can either get your trachea, get your lung removed, or do like this little trachea replacement. And I'm like, God damn, nigga.
Live your life in an iron lung with something helping you breathe,
or do this experimental shit that, you know,
that I'm working on. I've been doing it. Like, wow.
It's woo.
Yeah. There's a couple. Okay, now you got to get into crime with me.
I had to stop.
Look, you just opened yourself up.
Nightmares.
I will love you through it. I swear.
I got nightmares watching Boy Meets World because I'm.
Okay, never mind. What was the nightmare about?
I don't even remember, but I remember like binging it, and I was like, "Oh, finish this whole series." Binged it like crazy. Was staying up like I was a K-12 baby. And I told my mom, I was like, I got a nightmare. She was like, you can't watch Boy Meets World anymore.
No, them white people are fucking with your dreams.
I like a listener and I finished that shit. That's it.
You said Topanga, I feel something's off with you and you are infiltrating my sleep.
The dude she was with, I like Topanga. She's racist now, but like,
I was going to say in real life, she was racist. Yeah. Now, why would you do that and I am working? My God, okay.
Rude. Anyway, what's your last fact?
My last fact is August 23rd, 2008, we have the star-studded American women's basketball team led by Lisa Leslie Subert and Diana Taurasi, who win the gold medal at the Beijing Olympics, 92-65 over Australia. So, we have, I'm going to say who's on that team. So we had, like I said, Diana Taurasi, we had Lisa Leslie, and we had Sue Bird. We also had Simone Augustus of the Minnesota Lynx, Tamika Catchings, Indiana Fever, Sylvia Fowles, Chicago Sky, Kara Lawson, Sacramento Monarchs, Delisha Milton Jones of the Los Angeles Sparks, Candace Parker of the Los Angeles Sparks, Cappy Poindexter, Phoenix Mercury, Katie Smith, Detroit Shock, and Tina Thompson of the Houston Comets. I'm going to stop for a second and say Cappy Poindexter is somebody who I have followed on Instagram for a while. Cappy, I love her because she's not the tallest baller, mm-hmm. but she just plays with a lot of heart. Cappy, I do not want to claim this for her. I do not know in real time. This is what it looks like. Cappy is sometimes going through mental health crisis. And I think it is very sad because the women of this team and the previous teams that won got very little shine, very little trophies. Their money was not big enough and not long enough. And so now we're seeing things like professional athletes who went to the Olympics unable to get care for themselves.
That's a shame. You represent the country and you can't even get care?
That's it. And the men's teams... of most sports get a lot more funding because they typically are coming from the professional sports of their countries, whatever, specifically USA. But the mm-hmm. men, other than basketball, any other sport typically do not ball the way that the women do. They don't show up and show out the way that the women do, and they're not being supported. So I really hope that Cappy Poindexter is currently in a place where she's getting the help that she needs. It seems like a wave. Like sometimes she's good, she's on her meds, and you can tell with the posts, and then sometimes she's not. And because Hydia Broadbent passed away, who was an activist, she was an HIV activist. The first time I saw her, she was on Oprah. Mm. And I think at the time she was 9 or 11. I remember coming home from school and seeing her on TV. Hydia, when she was going through her mental health crisis, I wrote in her messages and I remember writing her in a DM and asked her, how are you and what do you need? And her response to me let me know that she was not well.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just one of her followers. Who do you reach out to, right?
Right. Because honestly, I would probably don't message. You just follow me. You don't know me, so I would probably.
But it was a post. No. She was literally posting like, "Y'all, I need help." But then when people responded to her, you could tell that she was in a different space than when she had the clarity of saying she needed help.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Cappy's not in a place where she asks for help all the time. So see something, say something.
Mm-hmm.
I bring that up because the women's basketball team is going to Paris again. It is now Olympic team time again. This team is Nafisa Collier. It could be Collier. Nafisa Collier, Minnesota Lynx. Kalia Cooper, Phoenix Mercury. Chelsea Gray, Las Vegas Aces. Brittany Griner, Big BG, Phoenix Mercury, Sabrina Ionescu, New York Liberty, Jewel Lloyd, 1L, Seattle Storm, Kelsey Plum, Las Vegas Aces, Brianna Stewart from New York Liberty, Diana Taurasi. Did you hear that name twice?
Mm-hmm.
Diana, do you hear it? That was 2008
and 2024.
Come on now, give it to her. Phoenix Mercury, Alyssa Thomas, Connecticut Sun, Asia Wilson, Las Vegas Aces, and Jackie Young of the Las Vegas Aces. I want to shout out the wonderful, wonderful team that is going out to Paris. Their schedule is as follows. July 29th, we have our first game against Japan. It says 1500 EDT. That's 3 p.m. EDT is when daylight savings time is in effect. I don't know. Y'all figure that out.
I don't know about
Second game is August 1st against Belgium, and then the third game is August 4th against Germany. These are all in Paris. Support the women's team because you see how these women have been hooping. Excuse me. It's been real awesome to watch.
Yeah. Boot sports. Shoot that ball.
I just want to say that Keeks looked at me with this face because we have literally been having discussions about the history reel being shorter. They checked time, I checked time, and they made a face. Babe, I got you.
I'm on it. I don't know nothing about no sports, but yes, support them women's. Yeah.
I'm on it.
The only thing I know is like Angel Reese fans are Reese's Pieces. And I was like, that's cute. Reese. I want to be a Reese's Pieces.
It's the cutest. Okay. I'm gonna do better because I keep saying we, and that's because I'm used to taking it.
I'm just vibing. I'm trying to say chilling and vibing at the same time.
Okay. All right.
What's after this? The plug.
It's the plug.
The plug.
The plug is take care of yourself, take care of others. Community is a real thing. Especially now. My God. Figure out community. Start bartering.
Take your misogyny and massage noir and your trans misogyny and trans massage noir. Because you niggas. Y'all be doing
so
things.
Let's get into the movie. So the movie is The Secret Life of Bees. The year is 2008. And this is by director Gina Prince Bythewood.
Yes.
Gina Prince Bythewood. And this movie is actually based off a book, Sue Monk Kid. I couldn't read my own handwriting. She is from Georgia. White woman. Let's get into this.
What are your categories? Give me your ranking first.
Ranking first, I gave this movie a 4.75.
Oh my God, twin. I gave it a 4.
Phew.
Anyway. What's your category?
So my categories are shit, girl, damn. That's just one category.
Damn.
Bees is the message. You're sick. Like gagged, but not really. Sometimes it was just, ooh. How long black women been saving y'all days? I have bitch because it's me. You see it with an exclamation point, lol, love. And then I had a side category that I wasn't sure how I felt all the way, but it is one, and it's Joan, just like that.
Yeah, okay.
What are your categories?
I have ain't too late to work on that aim. Because that's all you needed to say.
It's just a head shake. What the fuck else you want from me?
I have What in the Lovin' versus Virginia. And I have LOL.
Okay, let's get into this movie. So.
Oh, gosh. I did not like the. Don't you know, as soon as I got finished watching it, that was the first thing I wrote. I did not like this movie.
I hate so relationship awesome. With this movie.
The way, this is my second time seeing it, and the only thing I remember from my first time was Alicia Keys was in it, and I watched it again, and I was like, girl.
Like, I think this was maybe second or third time watching it in full, because again, seeing things in clips, I feel like this was also one of those TBS or TNT movies that they used to play on cable real often. The only thing that I remembered about this movie was the Wailing Wall. And I think I conflated that with another movie that was telling, or like maybe somebody, I don't know, maybe somebody told me, maybe it was a movie where they said you're supposed to tell the bees about the people who have passed so that
that's a very famous quote.
You know what I mean? So I think I have a love-hate relationship with this movie. Sue Monk Bird.
You shouldn't have. You had no business
Sue
writing this
Monk
book.
Sue Monk Kid. I'm sorry.
Had no business writing this book. What the fuck?
So let's get into that, because period pieces, right? Hashtag challenge white people to make period pieces that isn't about black trauma.
Because I was wondering, my whole thing with the book was like, well, my whole thing at first, I was mad at Gina, but I was like, girl, she worked with very limited material here.
That's it.
This whole thing was one from Lily's perspective. So we got this little white girl reporting on how like she was abandoned by her dad and like she had to go find solace in these black women. But I feel they were very reductive. Like Queen Latifah low-key gave like mammy vibe.
Mammy, and she was, and because she was her mama's mammy.
That, and Rosalind Jennifer Hudson was only there for her to leave her dad.
So here's the thing. I read before, because the synopsis, right? I was very interested in seeing what the synopsis of the movie was and what Sue Monk Kid wrote for herself of the movie. Excuse me, okay. I'm over here drinking my waters, and hopefully them burps don't come in. They just gonna know I'm burping because I keep saying excuse me. Okay, so the synopsis. You have that? You want to do it?
I got it. Okay. In 1964, a teenage girl in search of the truth about her mother runs away to a small town in South Carolina and finds a family of independent women who can connect her to her past.
So this is the back of the book from what I found on Sue Bird. Sue, I don't want, it's because we were talking basketball, on Sue Monk Kid's website. Set in South Carolina during 1964, The Secret Life of Bees tells a story of a 14-year-old white girl, Lily Owens, whose life has been shaped around the blurry memory of the afternoon her mother was killed. When Lily's fierce-hearted stand-in mother, Rosaline, insults three racists in town, they escape to Tyburn, South Carolina, a town that holds the secret to her mother's past. Taken in by an eccentric trio of black beekeeping sisters, Lily finds refuge in their mesmerizing world of bees, honey, and the Black Madonna. Lily starts a journey as much about her understanding of the world as about the mystery surrounding her mother. The Secret Life of Bees is a major literary triumph about the search for love and belonging, a novel that possesses a rare wisdom about life and the power of and divinity of the female spirit.
My thing is, though, and it's because I had to read the synopsis too, because some of these parts in the movie, I was like, what the fuck?
Because and I so, was, why?
Because I was low-key getting mad at it a little. Because I'm like, okay, yes, you're a child, but also you are 14 years old. You mm-hmm. understand how race and race relations work in this. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck was you at the movie with Zach knowing and kissing
sitting
him on
that
the
close
cheek,
and doing that? You know, and everywhere your little white ass follows, it seems like black people are getting their ass whooped.
And I literally wrote that it was like black people are casualties to white people's maturation, like especially when white
Come
people
on
now. Be like, oh, when you catch them using like racial slurs or I was young, I didn't know any better. Them black kids, them same ages are like casualties for you using racial slurs, but it's just like glossed over because you were young and you didn't know and you were innocent. And it felt like that's all she represented in the film. Like she was young, she was innocent, she didn't know it, but also like, sis, this is the world you were built around.
And you've known, and you do know it, and you do see it. And because you have black helpers and your black mammy came and stepped in for you, and the fact that even Sue Monk Kid decided that she would write that her step-in mom, who is just fierce and all of this, crosses the line knowing that it's racist in 1964 before civil rights were passed and you know, that type
I'm
of way.
Because she didn't go for Rosalind because, and it's even mentioned in the movie, like she didn't go and break
you ain't come for me.
Pill. Right. Not because you cared about her, but because your dad told you that your mom left you and she didn't love you. So you got Rosalind as an accomplice because she's also an adult. But
she's also the closest version of love and mother that she knows. And part of her is still a child, so she probably didn't want to run off on her own. But she couldn't leave her there on either. So she tried to show some sense of, but I was very glad that Rosaline decided to call her out on that shit in real time. It wasn't something that she sat with and simmered with and then was, you know, passive aggressive with her later. She showed it to her in real time. That shit is fucked up. And I'm here now. Dealing with the consequences of your spontaneity. The other part of that was Tristan Wilde's character who was in here. Tristan Wilde is an actor that I really would like to get more into because I think that he's shown himself as talented. I hope that he gets into more. He's also a rapper, T. Wilde's, but he plays Zach Taylor, right? Mm-hmm. So I was kind of frustrated with him, how he was able to see himself, see his dreams, see her dreams. And then as soon as, and I get it because of proximity, that and hormones and age and youth and all of that things that he was going to give into that a little bit, but you got your ass beat and everybody thought you were gone and may gone.
That's my thing. And I like that. I have a love-hate relationship with the way Lily at the end was like, oh, I killed May. I'm like, I'm good that you know, because if you didn't go out with that boy and like,
but also,
I know you shouldn't be blaming a child like that, but also
No, because I was with you. I was with you with blaming her for multiple fucking things. Not
that. This is certain responsibility you have to have because you are in this position of privilege, and it's the way that Black and marginalized people have to adjust themselves from a young age. Like, you can't wear this. You can't play with this. You have to do this.
Because by 14, were you not very cognizant of your effect on other people? And if somebody got hurt from something that you did wrong the first time, Keeks, would you have done that again at 14? Not hurt the way that Rosaline got hurt.
Right. You see what happened when, like, you didn't protect Rosaline. How the fuck did you think you were going to protect Zach?
And it was the exact same type of thing where, you know, Rosaline, I understand Rosaline, they showed her spice because the fact that she took her spit, her tobacco spit can, and did that, it was disgusting. So they definitely wanted you to see that she wasn't no punk bitch from how she was dealing with Dad and that interaction where she said something, he gave her the money. He asked her, but then he just gave her money. He didn't wait for a response. There was very much a level of respect that she has on their territory and their land. And I do appreciate Gina Prince Bythewood for giving us that, because her depiction and what she was able to show and what the character is probably written like in the book, I got a little bit of that. Okay. I even was able to see in aesthetics and design how when Rosaline was on their, I'm going to call it their campus, when she was with them at their peach farm on that campus or whatever, she had been trying to straighten her hair. It was broken. It was damaged. And when she got with these Black women, she was wearing her natural curls. So like that progression in character where she didn't have to be as hard, as tough, as whatever, she was able to loosen up around these Black women who eccentric in the way that she had never seen anything like them. Not that they were, you know, whatever. If we got into the individually.
They remarked on them. Yeah. Oh, they're so cultured. I've never seen them so cultured. I said, excuse you.
But it makes sense for Rosaline's character, who has been so limited, if her experiences were just on that peach farm. But she had a whole sense of responsibility and established authority and respect with the authority on there. So I felt like coming to the Boatwright House, I understood her shrinking, but I appreciated that she didn't disappear into herself, because that's not how the character seemed to have been written. And I appreciated the director's choice in giving it to like that on screen.
Okay, that makes me appreciate, because I was like, we started off with Rosaline trying to get her voter registration, and then we basically progressed to like this little white girl being supported by all of these Black people, completely forgetting like what like Rosaline was trying to do. But I do appreciate that she made a friend in May who was autistic. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Regulated by like humming, and like she had her little wailing wall. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
But I mean, after like I see her getting closer to May, but now that you put that perspective, I'm like, okay, so maybe it did transform her, but it was still not about her. And that's like,
she did get registered to vote.
Yeah, but this is a narrative in the eyes of a 14-year-old white girl. And I think that's mostly my problem, because it's like, June is the angry Black woman, in my opinion, which she has a 1964. She has a reason to be wary of you, little white girl, especially when you come in there lying. They knew
come
you
on
was
now.
Lying.
And even if she didn't know she was lying, she felt something off about her. But I have a question for you. Do you think that June's character was written that way because she was the youngest of all of the daughters and probably was given the opportunity to be more vigilant? Because she was activist, she was doing some of the stand-ins and the things that they were doing to lead up to civil rights. She was still protesting, she was still doing those things. Do you think it's that her character was written like that more because she was the youngest sister?
Or well, because May was the youngest, no lie. But no. I think that's because of the infantilization, because they infantilized a lot. And that's why
I May needed that. I appreciated that her sisters made room for that, and the fact that June was the one who had the idea for the wailing wall, because it shows you that as tough as June is, she still makes space in consideration and love for how to accommodate her sister.
Yes. And see, because I had to go back into like the book and read like synopses and whatnot, because I was like, what? I don't understand some things, because I found out that Zach Taylor didn't get arrested because he went to a movie theater. He got arrested because a group of Black people or Black dudes, and one of them threw a can at a police officer, and he wouldn't tell who did it. So that's why he got arrested.
Okay.
And then June was prejudiced against white people, which coming from the perspective of Lily, and she was like, how dare you judge me from the color of my skin? So I think they tried to like tone that down for the film because Gina is a person of color. So,
but also I wonder if, okay, so I, number one, they needed to make this more about this white girl. So they needed the perspective of why Zach got taken to be associated with her so that they could just see why she could do that. Oh, what was me? I'm such a bad person everywhere I go. Something follows.
Bother me, like,
it needed to progress into that. But then also I'm wondering if the placement of Alicia Keys as the youngest sister, specifically as June, and the one who does have prejudice against white people is because this person specifically in real life, Alicia Keys, is biracial, is light. She is a fairer black person. She's very obviously and does identify as a biracial black woman. But mm-hmm. I wonder if the decision to place her in that role and not to make her May was purposeful.
That's a good question. I will say, Alicia Keys, I forget how much of an accomplished artist she is, because in the black community they kind of reduce her as like,
oh, we talk shit.
We talk shit, but they're like, oh, you stole Swiss Beats from his wife, but also like nobody gives that same image to Swiss Beats. But
then also you can't steal nobody like, that don't want to steal.
Very misogynistic. Misogynoiristic. There you go.
Gonna be adding istics to stuff.
Look, I mean, I'm gonna nominalize or verbalize something. Look,
I love it. You've done it two or three other times. And it's tickling me every time.
So, because I know you remember recently when I think it was Apple who was giving out like awards for like best of all time, and they like completely skipped over Alicia Keys.
And Alicia had to show her fucking
her 16 fucking Grammys.
And you know what?
Respect on her name.
We talk shit as a community, and I think what it
but
is
we
is
that love that, her.
But we like, love Alicia Keys down. Playing. We talked about the Super Bowl and that howl that she did, that little break in pitch.
But you had to explain to me like during her formative years, like people were like, you can't sing, so she kind of wore
and
down
she took
her
the
foot.
Mic
so
she'd hit the mic and said, I don't need this hoe, and she was singing in stadiums, you know, projecting in that way. Alicia Keys is also, the struggle comes with her voice when she's singing those songs. The first album, the debut album, was 2001. It's called Songs in A Minor. That just mm-hmm. may not be the range of her voice anymore,
because she was young. She's like 40s now. Maybe?
Come on now. She dropped that album and she was 19, I think. That shit's amazing. It went to sell over 12 million copies worldwide and won 5 awards at the Grammys. And then she did The Diary of Alicia Keys, which had You Don't Know My Name, I Ain't Got You, and Diary. And everybody talks about how the background vocal on Diary killed her. But how confident do you have to be as a writer and a singer to let your background vocal kill like that?
Like, she... As I Am, The Element of Freedom.
Because As I Am is my fucking album. I don't give a damn.
Album. When I tell you, have it on my phone and everything, that is...
Bought it. Had it in hard copy. It's still on my goddamn bookcase.
Definitely bought that shit. And when I lost it in the move.
Oh, no, babe.
I was so upset because I was like, man, she keeps... But I did find she has 2 Guinness World Records. One for the first singer to replace themselves at number one on a U.S. R&B hip-hop songs chart. So, Like You'll Never See Me Again, replace no one.
Wow.
And the second one is for the most MTV nominations for Best R&B, which was 6. 790 nominations and 272 wins. Like, please, stop playing on this girl.
Stop playing with her. And I absolutely... And okay, so my only note is that New York women do give dyke vibes. I love her down, but like young her...
There's a rumor,
but it's her, with doing research. So at a time when she first dropped, you would hear some of the production at the end, she would say Crucial Keys. Crucial is a person... It's a man. They was in a relationship on the low for years. So, like, I don't know what it is about New York women. And I think it's probably the harshness of life that they have to be out there. Like, the elements, the danger, the partying that they're able to access, the whatever. Something about New York women, I immediately see them and be like, ooh, girl, you gay? I'm sorry, Alicia, because apparently she's not. And if she dibbled and dabbled, everybody can dibble and dabble and not be full on blown. Okay, so she liked the men's. That's what
you shouldn't dibble and dabble. Well, you should be.
I think everyone should dibble and dabble. Yeah. I think if your man sucked dick one time, it was one time, girl, get over it. But you see what I'm saying?
If I cook pasta, what's all about shit?
Come the fuck on. I'm just saying. So it's like, I don't know. I just started watching Insecure again, and Molly really missed out on a good man. I'm sorry.
I need to finish that series because I haven't finished it. You know
that's why I started it again, because you know me. You know I didn't finish it. You know I didn't finish it.
Oh my gosh. Can we start? Can we talk about Jennifer Hudson, J. Hud? I fucking love her. When I tell you.
She said, I don't like...
Love her to death. So, finalist on America. She went from finalist on American Idol to the youngest woman and the third African-American recipient of an EGOT in 2021. Ooh. The first was Whoopi Goldberg and John Legend at 47 and 40, respectively. She was 41.
Come on now.
Her self-titled debut album got her first Grammy. Her debut film, Dreamgirls, got her first Oscar. Her Broadway acting debut, The Color Purple, got her second Grammy. And then she got her 2021 Baba Yaga for her Emmy, and A Strange Loop got the Tony. Let me tell you, that
motherfucker works. And again, we talk shit about Jennifer Hudson, but we also, as she is credited, we love her down. And Jennifer Hudson is a survivor in the way that I forgot about. So 2008, the same year that this movie came out, and the fact that she dropped her debut album, I believe, in 2008, she had a horrible, devastating loss to her family. Her sister's husband killed her mother, her brother, and her nephew. It was a triple homicide. Yes. That was Jennifer Hudson. And part of the reason that we don't remember it is because Jennifer Hudson, it seems like she has just excelled past that. But I think that in joking about her, we need to remember that she is that person who did all of that, and she didn't let them die and then just have that be something that she mourned privately. Her and her sister created the Julian D. King Gift Foundation, which is their nephew, her sister's son, her nephew. And then they also have the Hudson King Foundation for Families of Slain Victims, in honor of the three victims, that supports people who are getting back on their feet or supports them through grieving, you know, that type of loss. So I think that outside of the fact that she is just incredibly talented, and her voice is huge and recognizable, nobody can sing. I think somebody could probably
not me singing, but supposed to look, nobody can sing.
Come
that.
On, Effie. But there's not. And I think that her rendition of it is what made Dreamgirls. Of course, you know, it publicized it again. That's why Dreamgirls is not going to die. Amber P. Riley was on tour doing Dreamgirls over in London and stuff like that, because you get Sangas to be Effie. Oh, you know what I mean? God. You get Sangas.
To see Amber.
Well, she's out right now. I don't know if she's still out here, but she was doing The Preacher's Wife. Shout out to Amber P. Riley. She was doing The Preacher's Wife in Atlanta. That was, it might be on tour right now, but that was with like Loretta Devine. There was a lot of people in there as well. It was written by Titus Burgess. We love Titus as well. So shout out to the people who, you know, who are able to pull the roles, who are able to pull the music, who are able to pull that type of character, right? And in this movie, I feel like even with her being in the book, she was a bigger role. In the movie, she wasn't as big of a role. Even with her not being as big, she was pretty impactful. So I appreciate it. Sophie Okinoto.
Yes, English actor.
Nope. Big CBE.
British actress, my bad. Because England and Britain, not the same. She has a Tony.
I'm so confused.
No, stop. They'll be like, these Americans don't know geography. And
they don't know squat.
She has a Tony and an Evening Star Theater Award, which is like Britain's like longest standing like theater award.
Okay.
No, no, I thought she was a dame. I put dame question.
She is big CBE. She was appointed Office of the Order of the British Empire, the OBE, in 2010, and then Commander of the Order of the British Empire, CBE, in 2019, both of them for services to drama.
Yes, a child of the theater. We love them.
Love that.
My God. She did A Raisin in the Sun, which got her her Tony, The Crucible, Antony and Cleopatra. And film-wise, she did Young Soul Rebels, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls.
Yes.
Hotel Rwanda and Death on the Nile. And a few
she don't do shit it. But stun on hoes. That's all she do. She picks roles and then she does them well. The fact that May is, I don't know if in the book she was written like that. I hope that she was written with, and they said, you know, her being special.
And she was. Because I went to the book Wikipedia, they was like, oh, she could be classified as autistic. I was like, okay, because that's what I read. Because
I definitely read, and I definitely was like, I put a little question mark, like, because I appreciated that. I also saw myself in her, because you know humming is one of my self-soothing things. I think that writing notes and leaving them to just fade in, like, if you could find a biodegradable paper to do that with, writing your emotions out is a wonderful way of getting it the fuck out.
I love the way she self-regulated and co-regulated with people. Is like, oh, I need to go to the Wailing Wall, or oh, I'm going to the wall.
Or when someone said, told her to go to the wall, she didn't debate it. She said, right. Okay, maybe I need that. I think that her successful suicide was very interesting.
I hated it, because why did you kill the disabled person? Why did you kill the disabled person who they said that they deliberately left out of institutionalization?
And then did not give her the information about what was happening with Zach, because they did not want her to take it badly, and then let her wander on her own because they thought that she could handle the Wailing Wall. I could tell by the way she walked away, she was not okay. And I was fucked up because she literally said, so when August was explaining it to Lily, and she said it seemed like when her twin sister died, she took on all of the emotions for the entire world. When she wrote her suicide note, she said, I am tired of carrying the world. Yeah. It's exactly how she felt. So I was conflicted in the fact that I felt like she was at peace. But I was upset with, I guess, with Sue Monk.
And that's exactly what it is, because I don't appreciate a white woman writing that Black women are tired of carrying the world, and what are you doing to lift it off of her shoulders?
Come the fuck on.
Like, bitch.
Like, it just was, it was a lot.
You killed her because I was so upset.
It was upsetting. Queen Latifah, though.
Loved her. I've seen almost everything that she's been in. I didn't even have to go to Wikipedia.
Didn't have to. I really do believe that Queen Latifah's presence on film is something to marvel. She is amazing.
Hairspray, Last Holiday, 22 Jump Street. She was in The Wiz. She was Spit It Off, Living Single, Girl Trip. She did Star. Man, I loved her in Star.
Listen.
They should have renewed that shit.
But her in Chicago is probably what got me back started on it. So everybody was real hyped up on Rent at the time. And then when Chicago dropped, I think I watched it like it was playing on whatever stream. Like, I had cable at the time. It played every 2 or 3 days, and I watched it every time it came on. I didn't know that Queen Latifah would give it to me like that. I do want to say that Queen Latifah, like you said, is one of the few people to get Academy Award for a Best Picture. She's one of 5 hip-hop artists to win for an acting category. We have Will Smith, who got Ali and The Pursuit of Happiness, Jennifer Hudson, Jamie Foxx for Ray, and then he also did Collateral, and then Mary J. Blige for Mudbound. Mudbound, shout out to Dee Reese.
We're going to have to put that in the...
It's in there. It's in the ones that are based off of books. And it turns out that some of our favorite movies to watch, or the ones that we have the most commentary on, are the ones that were based off of books.
I'm going to just add that Mother. When y'all be like, oh, that's Mother. Jill Scott, Lil' Kim, Da Brat, E, Lauryn Hill, Missy Elliott. Stop playing with
Queen Latifah. You got to give it to them. Like, oh my God.
She is your favorite inspiration. Okay,
MC Light, all of them.
Michael K. Williams, like...
I just love, she's worked with so many people. I think that being able to show her bringing down the house and all these other movies where she, and like bringing down the house, showing her comedy, when she was placed in romantic roles, Last Holiday, mm-hmm. things, being able to see her in this facet.
Love her for that.
I love her down.
Girl.
In this movie though, did you notice, I really appreciated whoever did the makeup and how dewy everybody, because they're working outside. They didn't look sweaty. They look dewy, natural, flawless skin. Queen Latifah's skin in this looked amazing. Amazing. She looked so good.
It did.
She looked so good. What? Now, the one thing I will say is, like you said, I said, and you concurred with Sue Monk Kid, I have beef with you. It's because we were just talking Sue Bird. Sue Bird is fine on the low. I'm sorry. She's really cute. She's cute.
Gotta
she's
look what she looks like. So, she's but so cute. I will say, Dakota Fanning, if you want to listen to what we said about Dakota Fanning, go back to season 2, episode 24. Coraline
gone, ain't it?
Did we? Okay, maybe.
Dog. We've talked about Elle Fanning. So we've talked about Dakota. Mm-hmm.
No, because I had to go on the website and see. Yeah, we still got Coraline.
No. The website might have the ranking. RSS.
I went on RSS.
Ah, and saw, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I had to see what season and whatnot. Because we need to add a search button. I need to, that's what I tried to log in.
We need
in.
That real bad. Like,
damn, I'm going to do all of this. I don't even remember
what I wouldn't do this. It
was. I was trying to log in and do it. I couldn't even do it. So we'll figure it out.
Okay. I do have beef with Sue Monk Bird because, oh my God, whatever, white woman, not the fine one, this racist right here. Because I really do feel like, especially with white people, when you choose to I'm so tired of trying to figure out the name.
Who was Sue Bird?
Please look up Sue Bird because she is so cute. She's not like fine. She is so cute.
Well, she's adorable.
She's the cutest.
Started swinging my thing.
No, and these motherfuckers be tall.
Look.
Come get this off the shelf for me.
I'm done with you.
Come get that cereal. Listen.
She's cute. She's adorable.
But Sue Monk Kid of Georgia. I have beef with her because, like you said, she is writing Black women plight and not showing up in any way other than to profit off of it. I think that Gina Prince-Bythewood, when I looked into her, they said that her directorial style was to emphasize some of the strengths of Black women. So she probably chose this book specifically because these women were strong. And in a time of 1964 South Carolina, where this was placed, this white woman did decide to give some power, authority, financial literacy, all of that to this Black women trio of sisters, plus this wildcat that came in from out of town with this little white girl. So I'm not mad. None of my judgments are against Gina Prince-Bythewood, even though I could probably say, like, I don't understand why she did or what she did, what she, like you said, what she could.
So she worked with what she had, honestly. Yeah. And it wasn't much. I do have a problem, and it probably is a Sue Monk Kid problem. Why bees? Because I know bees. I love bees. I love them to death. Special interest. If you're part of the hive, you're part of the hive. But if you're not, like if this is like, oh, Lily coming in, they gonna kick your ass out. We got guard bees at the front of the hive. Like, they're just gonna boop, bye. Because my whole thing was, oh, bees, the community. But the bee community is working towards a
common goal.
That, and I'm like, you, this white woman in civil rights, 1964, you guys are not working towards a common goal.
But she had in her heart that they were all equal. And I wonder if it was bees so that they could show that type of, show those same elements from the bee community in the Boatwright household. So you would have June, who would be like the warrior bee, the soldier bee, who would be like, kick this invader bee out. And these other ones, Big Mama Bee, who gets to look and see, and these worker bees who get to dance around and figure it out. And then for her to be accepted into the hive, because it is a fact that bees will accept other bees from different hives if they come with respect. Right. So it's like, I wonder your fucking face. You were so funny.
I, with the way, because they was like, oh, they are the moon shining over me. And I'm like,
that closing pissed me off so bad.
And I get Mother Moon is like very central in like culture, but there are some cultures who consider the father the moon and the mother the sun. And why you could have just been like, oh, mothers is golden. They are the sun shining over me as golden as their honey. Like, it makes more sense. Like,
and the fact that they kept calling, they kept saying Mary, and not calling her the Black Madonna was kind of pissing me off.
Yeah, I don't like the way Lily was touching on her and like asking.
I didn't
her
like that friend. She touched her at all.
Like, and June was right to be like, no, don't do
that. Stop playing.
Yes.
I felt that deep in my spirit, in my soul, because when she was walking over, my eyes went wide. I was like, is she about to touch the yes. Black Madonna? Oh, now, it's not. Because my thing is the same thing. There's a difference between cultural appreciation and appropriation. She could have sat yes. and reverenced and been with them in their time and just sat. You could even be moved. You can say the prayers. You can do all of that. Don't touch
moved. Yes,
my but, shit.
And it's the fact that Queen Latifah at the end, because this two instances where she pissed me off. It was the one where when she got J-Hud out and she was like, you lucky I got you out kind of stuff. And I was like, bitch. And then it was when Queen Latifah was like, oh yeah, I knew that you was, you know, so-and-so started. Why didn't you tell me? You was lying to me too. But also things are different in her world than mine. And you know that.
They are. And I think it was her questioning was like, why didn't you tell me? Is because she feels like had she not had to keep the secret, like she said to Zach, had I not tried to keep this secret, so much wouldn't have happened. And if you knew that already, we could have gotten through the secret telling part. But baby, that was your secret to keep, not mine.
And then afterwards, you're going to go and destroy August Honey that she built? That shit pissed me off. The entitlement in that. And you were a father, mother? Bitch.
When Rosaline became July...
See, that's the B that was adopted in.
That's it. Not Lily. Call it out, because yeah. Okay, so what were your ticks?
Okay. Ain't Too Late to Work on That Aim was 16.
Because that nigga needed to die.
Now,
T-Ray needed to die.
He was so awful. Now, why are we in this at 21? Because I N-word four or five times. God sent a Black woman to take care of you.
Come on.
I didn't like that. Which was mainly about Lily had 25. What in the Loving Versus Virginia had 5 and LOL had 6. And it's not even, like, I'm joking about Loving Versus Virginia, but like, it was a monumental case, yes, but the things that they have
done introduced now, biracials as a legal thing. Like, interracial marriage means now biracials can be here. And now the standard of beauty is
I don't want to say it's co-op.
White aesthetic. Yeah, it's co-op. It's white aesthetic on a tanner skin. And I'm just, I'm not against anybody or anything. I want everybody to live and love the way that they fucking want to. I just want them to recognize, I want everybody to recognize how things are trends and how they go and how people, the erasure of other things.
Reflected in our media. And come now, on now. Like, white, the category of whiteness is ever expanding. Like, Clarence Thomas is trying to push for Loving Versus Virginia to go away, but also he's trying
to include his Asian wife.
He's trying to include her into like the category of whiteness. That's how expansive whiteness is as a category. Yeah.
Maybe that's why I thought his wife was white. And the thing about it is that it said interracial marriage, which means it doesn't matter what category you fall into. Interracial marriage would be illegal, bitch. So if you are not the same. So but it's the erasure and how it comes into and affects everything, because people will talk about, like, I remember questioning when I saw Lupita Nyong'o and I was like, where was she when I was growing up? Baby, there was plenty of dark-skinned Black people growing up, and I had to remember that, because the people that I were seeing on my television screen were born before Loving in Virginia. I got to see Black people. And then when I saw racially ambiguous people, I swear to God, it was, I did not think about it until recently. It's because they weren't allowed. Fucked up. Mm. But you know what I'm saying? Legally, you could not be, you intermixing, you, and there was all kind of names for it. I really, my challenge would be for white people specifically, if you were going to write a period piece that has to do with the American South, if it has to do with American Blacks, if you were going to write a period piece, take it from a perspective that does not include or center Black drama, Black trauma, or Black healing, because you don't know shit about it. And like Keek said, you're not helping in with that in real time. All you're doing now is profiting off of thinking back in oh, hindsight is 2020. We should have been nicer. And if Sue Monk Kidd had this type of experience when she was growing up in Georgia, if she as a white woman is like, no, actually my first love was a Black man and I ended up marrying a Black man, good for fucking you. Black by injection doesn't do enough for me.
And I hate when people be like, oh, they're a product of their time. There was niggas in 1776 that was against slavery. Like, what do you mean product of your time?
And I'm literally reading, I'm doing research to help support me in my novel writing, right? And I'm reading about a part of Georgia where there were some people who legit, at first, they were all against it. All against slavery. Specifically, Scottish people were like, fuck that. London said, listen, fuck you. You're not big enough to tell me what the fuck to do, you little ass colony in the state of Georgia. And as soon as it got passed, and Georgia was like, all right, fine, because the whole state of Georgia was against it, but they had various pockets. And then when they figured out the benefit of it, guess what? Them same Scottish people got slaves and sent them to work. I don't care.
We have O'Neills and O'Connery's, Black people with Scottish,
with my Scottish ass last name. You know what I'm saying? So I really don't care. My challenge would be for any writer who is trying, especially these white ones who are trying to write period pieces, as a person who's currently writing a period piece, do better, try harder. I don't know,
maybe get a pay a Black person to like consult, because it's like, I don't want you to erase it, like exclude it altogether. Like, oh, Black people wasn't here. I've read enough historical fiction where I'm just like, what about folks?
I'm reading a nonfiction historical dialogue between people. It's a collection of stories, but it is also from a white woman. And in the parts that are not quotes, you know what I'm saying? Because this is historical, because she decided to go back. She is also very heavily using the N-word. And I feel like you just want the opportunity to do that. My challenge would be to white writers specifically, figure out a way to do it without that. I just want to see.
Or, I don't know, make a time travel. No, that has, you know what, whiteness permeates. Anyway,
I'm telling you, because are Black people in your version of space? Are they in the future?
It's so much.
Are the areolas big?
There's so much documentation about that too. So
about small areolas on the androids? No, because you know that's my real fight.
We could talk about this for hours.
My ticks. Shit Girl Damn has 8. Bees Is the Message has 9. You're Sick has 16. How Long Black Women Been Saving Y'all Days has 13. Bitch has 19. You See It has 22, which is kind of in the face of everybody. My LOL only has 4. Love had 13, but I don't know if it was that I loved something or if it was the feeling and showing of love between sisters or like bond. I'm not sure. And then June has 5. Our combined ranking is a 4.375 out of 10.
Too high.
You are so funny. I think that that's pretty accurate. IMDb gave this a 7.2 out of 10 and Rotten Tomatoes gave this a 60%. The only reason this isn't about the movie itself, visually I did appreciate it. There were some things that I wish could have been on the cutting room floor, and it wasn't visual, it was script. So
it was very much your source material, where you got this from. I don't know, yep. Maybe you should have pulled a Ava DuVernay and like adaptation
scrap all this shit. Speaking of, bruh, there was a 2004 made for TV version of A Wrinkle in Time that Disney did, and Yeah. We have quick housekeeping before we get the fuck up out of here. We have a new tab on our website that is called Let Me Just Add. Learned along the way since recording the episodes, because the work doesn't stop at the end of the episodes. Keeks, your face lets me know that I should absolutely make a post about the original made-for-TV adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time.
We'll love to know what happened there, because...
It also flopped.
I mean, also, maybe we should just let some classics, quote, go. Like, maybe it shouldn't be a classic.
In doing research, I saw that that book got turned down by something like 27 literary houses.
Maybe it wasn't supposed to come out.
Flop.
I think, and then sometimes they ban that book, too, because of, like, the... So, I don't know. Let people read what they want, but read critically, okay? Read critically.
Sticky. All right, so that's us for this episode with delirious rankings and delirious rantings. I'm gonna do better. Promise you I will. Little hearts, big hearts.
Little hearts, big hearts. We'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.